Hello and welcome to the Reverbathon Special Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course, on our podcast. I'm Ady Packham, and myself and Alan Wares are broadcasting to you live from Brighton's Open Market. We are delighted to be sponsored today by the delightfully fragrant Flowers Unlimited, the delightfully fizzy Ridgeview Wine Estate, and Ensure Financial Planners. But Al, what is a Reverbathon?
Did you mean the delightfully financial Ensure?
Delightfully financial, yes.
Yes. Reverbathon, we want your money. Ady, back to you.
Oh, good, there we go. So how can you give us some money?
Okay, well, this is the Reverbathon. This is Radio Reverb is a community radio station. We're not commercial. We're not a commercial radio station, so we rely on sponsorships, donations and grants for our funding. We are sitting here in this salubrious studio here at the Open Market. We are live. It's just gone 5 o'clock. Newcastle have just stuck another five past Sheffield United. That's how live we are. So we rely on your donations, please. So it's the Reverbathon. We're live all weekend. So just go to RadioReverb.com. There's a donate button there that will take you onto either a PayPal payment or pay by your card. Your support will go quite a way into keeping this wonderful community project going. So if you get a mo, just head online, go to RadioReverb.com, hit the donate button and give us all your money in a Bob Geldof type way.
Without the swearing. Okay, speaking about swearing, shall I do this bit?
Oh, God.
Here we go. So then, on with the show. And it was a frustrating night at the Amex on Thursday as champions Manchester City eased past us. But they did get a helping hand from a woeful performance by referee Jared Gillett, which left us asking the question of which Australians could have done a better job. I'm going with Bouncer from Neighbours.
Can I go with Skippy?
Steve Irwin's ghost.
They made them.
It was a defeat that saw us drop out of the top 10 for the first time this season, but we can put that right if we can get a result tomorrow at Bournemouth. And with myself today, as we are Reverbathon and is a wonderful guy. I mean, basically, if we want to try and get back into Europe the next season, we might need some holy intervention. So we've got a vicar in here in the shape of John Palfrey, and we're also delighted to welcome back a man who's the only man who's ever appeared on the Albion Roar who owns a Countdown teapot. It's Steve Agass.
Are you also not still the current Renf quiz champion?
No, there was one more, I think, wasn't there?
One more,
I think there was one more. We did win it. miraculously. Good
so,
squad.
Actually, I mean, I'm in salubrious company here. I think I'm the only one never to have won the Renf quiz.
That's because you always did the Renf quiz.
So?
John, have you won the Renf quiz?
No, I haven't, no. I'm trying to avoid quizzes.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, my knowledge of what's happening on these TV Coronation Streets and whatever
How
is absolutely
very
zero.
Dare you think that I'd set a quiz like that?
Yeah, basically, I mean, if you want to know, I mean, Al's questions are normally about the dimensions of a pitch that we played on about 30 years ago or something.
Yes. Like,
what colour grass was...
maybe I'll stick with the soap opera.
Okay. we're just procrastinating here because we, you know, without swearing, we've got to talk about Thursday's game, haven't we?
I suppose we have to, but there are positives to take out of it. We'll start with it was the first start for Valentin Barco. He made a few mistakes in the game, John, but it was a good start, good performance.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, you know, you're going to be nervous in your full debut, and I take that on board. But you know, the more the game went on, the more his confidence came about, and he seemed to be pushing up into an almost Mitoma-style wing scenario by the end of the game, which makes me think, why not?
Well, yeah, I mean, Steve, I mean, this is something that, I mean, we've been talking about it on this show for months now. The injury crisis that we've got, I mean, when you're going into these games, I mean, last season when City came here, obviously, goal of the season, the one that we get to see on Match of the Day every week. I'm going to miss watching that goal every week.
You can watch it as often as you like, mate. It's on YouTube.
But it was, you know, we went toe-to-toe with them last season. We put up a fantastic performance. We know City are good, right? There's no shame in losing to Manchester City, but just you want to do it with the best possible team, with the best possible squad, and the injuries are just mounting up. I mean, I've just heard that we lost Van Hecke for the rest of the season there as well.
It's getting a bit ridiculous, isn't it, in terms of the injuries? But I mean, what I thought was interesting was he reverted to giving the kids a chance, didn't he? I mean, we finished the game with four kids that probably had, 10 appearances between them?
Mm. Yeah. If you're going to blood them, then, you know, let's throw them into Dante's inferno here.
Well, we
yeah.
were all in the Colosseum, you know, a month or two ago, so...
Well, this is it. I mean, I think that the point you're making about Barco is that... And I was watching. I was reading a couple of tweets during the game about how he's been playing in various positions for Boca Juniors, and the place that they seem to be saying that he's least suited to is left back, even though we've nominally signed him as a left back. I mean, there's a touch of Pascal Gross about him, as much as he's played just about everywhere, fullback. Left out wide, central midfield. So there's, you know, if there's going to be a natural successor, I think if that's their thinking, then it's possible he is the next person after Gross. Mm. And so, yeah, you're quite right. There's a couple of goals that I wouldn't say you could point your finger at him. I mean, for the one that Carl Walker kicked Jason Steele's face off for, the fourth one, yeah, he was out of position. That's naivety. There's the one where we're trying to out-City City. I mean, and it was getting ridiculous, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was his pass that was intercepted, but actually there were times where when any one of those players could have done a lot better, and it just sort of threw him into the pit of vipers for the finger to be pointed out. Collectively, they were all to blame for that goal.
It's funny that, because I've got a mate who used to run a shop that sold T-shirts. I can't remember who that was, but there was one.
It was
that...
terrible. It was a real jumble sale.
Yeah, but there's one Rose Ed No Messing. Yes. Philosophical Sussex. There's the way that we play. We've been messing around with the back like that for quite a while. The idea is that we know is to draw them in and then leave yourself with the out ball. But we're doing it without anyone available for the out ball.
Well, I think that you've got some inexperience once again. And this is where the players are missing. You know that, all right, Billy Gilmore is his first proper season with us. I mean, he was a bits and pieces player trying to get in ahead of McAllister and Caicedo last season. Yeah, good luck with that for anyone. So it's his first full season, and he has grown into the role to the point that, you know, we're now missing him, and we're part of that. Is part of that horrific injury list. Although I understand he's back for the Bournemouth game, but Gilmore would have been there. But Belieber is again still a work in progress, and so. I mean, you say messing around at the back. I think someone said it's 9 goals we conceded on the back of mistakes from that. But, John, we've been doing this for 100 games, and we do it, 20 times a game? That's 2,000 times we've done it, and we've messed it up 9 times. It's not a horrific return, is it?
It's not a horrific return at all, but I think the thing is we had to take into account the circumstances that were around us on Thursday, complete Man City.
Yes.
And doing that probably isn't the best idea on this particular occasion.
No.
So, yeah, I think I'm with you on the T-shirt. That Rose Ed would have done nicely.
No, quite. So, and there were a couple of times we could see Belieber could have. I think there's the communication thing as well. There's a couple of times when the ball was played to a player and it gets played back straight away. In fact, I even saw it a couple of times with City. So it's one of the things. The ball gets played to a player who's in a bit of space and they'll play it back to the same person. But actually, all someone needs to do is say, turn, and actually, you've then taken out 3 players. And if someone had told Belieber at some point in that mucking about bit, as you call it, to turn, he'd have lost his man.
Yeah.
And we'd have been away. I mean, and it is if, and that's the nature of it. It's a case of all of them getting used to it. And yet, for all the fact it was Barco's debut, or his first start, sorry, he looked quite at home with it. All right, yes, he fouled up and it led to a goal, but he didn't do it again.
No,
I was just going to say, I think one of the things you have to do is give City credit for their press.
Yeah.
I mean, they were phenomenally up for it and all over us. It made it really, really difficult to play the way we wanted to play, and lots of teams have tried to press us and failed in the last I guess, you know, 18 months.
Yeah.
City did it really, really well.
But, I mean, that's no surprise. That's how they play. I mean, they are very, very disciplined with it.
Yeah, but you've also got Pep Guardiola, who's a massive fan of Roberto Di Zerbi, who would have studied him. You know, he's saying, this is stuff I've never done before. So he's now almost gone to the school of Di Zerbi to out-Di Zerbi.
Yeah, probably.
You know.
Okay, but before we move on from Barker, there was another... he took a couple of the corners. Now, our corners are, generally speaking, not very good, are they? I mean, you know, sometimes quite often not beating the first man. I mean, actually, the best corner taker we've had, really, is Solly March, and we haven't seen him for months. But he did take that corner. It was low, it was flat, and Lewis Dunk should have scored.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes.
You can't really say anything else to that.
But there was loads of pace on it, wasn't there? So you would fancy him to score. I mean, all you've got to do is redirect the ball. But he literally headed it straight back, which is what you meant to do, right? Yes. Headed it straight back across. Didn't use the pace of it so much. Straight into Edison's arms. It was unfortunate.
But I think that's the point is that AD's making is that corners that have come in before have been, I'm going to use the word carefully here, floaters. They kind of float across the area. I think the point you're making is he pinged it. And there was a couple of other times where his crosses were all right, you know, one did go out into Rose Ed. But I think that in looking at Barco's overall thing, yes, naive, there was a sense of naivety. He's playing in the Premier League. You can clearly see there's a step up from what he was doing at Boca Juniors.
Sure.
But he grew into the game. He didn't let his mistakes affect him. And I think he was probably better. And this is the point I think that the South American football expert was saying. He was probably better when he was going forwards.
Yeah. And when we were playing Wolverhampton, and, you know, I think he came on with about 10 minutes to go or something like that, the game immediately changed.
Yeah,
and we were very much on the front foot, and he was basically leading the charge. You know, his crossing and his ball play was fantastic, and it really turned the game in our favour, but sadly a little too late.
Well, quite. And it then says to me, I mean, here we are with, what, half a dozen games to go, I lose track. But once he's managed to have a pre-season, a full pre-season with Di Zerbi, who, incidentally, as we've said on the show many times, we're extremely confident is staying now. Yeah. So,
well, even he's talking about next season.
Absolutely.
Now,
so. And you think that hopefully the likes of Baliba and all these players who are in their first season with us, they've got, and don't forget, even now, you still bear in mind, Roberto Di Zerbi has not had a full season with us yet. We still haven't had that. And here he is, this sort of like demigod who's been sort of touted to absolutely everyone and back again. And he hasn't had a full season with us.
True.
So, you know, once that second full season, that's the second pre-season, and he's able to get, and hopefully we can then do the transfer stuff, and with new players come in, then, yeah, we're marking time. But let's face it, we're back to context once more. All right, even if we finish 11th, that's our third best finish ever. And that's in the last three years.
Okay.
We're on the crest of what we do here.
Okay, well, you're listening to the Reverbathon here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and, of course, on the podcast. And if you are listening to the podcast, you can still donate. It doesn't have to be we are live today, but you can donate any time you want. Just go to www.RadioReverb.com and hit that big donate button. Now, Al, we've got some sponsors today.
Well, you can hit that donate button, but make sure you do it bigly. So, yes, a great big thank you for, as a Reverbathon co-sponsor for today, to Ridgeview Wine Estate. Now, this is good stuff.
It is good stuff.
Crafting world-class English sparkling wine since 1995 in Ditchling. Ridgeview's award-winning range makes every occasion something to celebrate. B Corp accredited, for those that don't know what that is, that's just very quickly that they have a good set of principles when it comes to environmental and sustainability aptitudes with their staff and their whole outlook of running their company. So B Corp accredited for their dedication to sustainability. Come and visit their estate to learn more about their wine, enjoy a vineyard tour, or dine at their unique restaurant set beside the vines.
It is good.
Thoroughly recommended.
Have you done the tour?
I've not been there for a while. I used to work there before it was a wine estate. Actually.
No way.
What was it then? Was it a stinky farm?
It was a farm. Yeah, I used to muck out donkeys.
And you used to go to school with the chief executive.
I did. Yeah, Tam's a good friend of mine.
There we go.
As is Lardy, our husband.
Donkeys.
Ladies, donkeys.
And of course, we can't forget that like Tam was once in here with Joe from Piglets.
Actually, it's probably right. It was it the first day of us being in the Premier League, I think.
I can't remember.
We were in here.
I couldn't remember much afterwards either.
I wonder, actually, if they're missing a trick. You came to that. I mean, when I was in Iceland last year, we were enchanted.
Well, the supermarket or the country?
The country. We were enchanted by a local whiskey which was made from sheep shit, basically. And when we got it home, we opened it up, and of course, it didn't taste quite so good once we got it
home.
No, I can
imagine that.
Back in the real world.
Yeah,
but maybe, Bridgeway, there's something there, you know, an aperitif.
I don't think the donkeys are alive anymore. I mean, we're talking about 40 years ago.
but it's in the ground, isn't it? seeping up through the surface.
Apologies for John's graphic description of the content of this whiskey, but no, we get
this is better than talking about a Man City, like, let's face it. But we've got to talk about it. And
sorry, just quickly, thank you, Tam and Simon and everyone at Ridgeview for supporting us. Thank you.
Thank you very
much.
And
do the tour; it's brilliant.
Really
good. Yeah.
Well, actually, if Claire we can actually just postpone talking about Man City, Steve, tell us about the tour.
The Ridgeview tour. I'm sorry, but they're sponsoring us, but they haven't provided any, so I can't really tell you. Well, no, the tour is amazing. You just go up, you see round all the cellars, you do the tour of the vines, you see all of that. They explain kind of where all the different vines are. They talk about what they do to protect it from frost and kind of all the things they have to go through to curtail the British weather. And then the most important part is you get to taste it on this beautiful kind of...
Still all sparkling stuff you taste.
Oh, it's all sparkling, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
all sparkling. They have the slight rosé one as well that you taste. It's really, really good. And it won the Blanc de Blanc, didn't it?
Yeah,
it's 2010, I think it was.
It's always winning awards. Yeah.
It seems to be a thing with the Sussex countryside to concentrate more on sparkling wines.
Yes.
And, I mean, they are Sussex sparkling wines are winning international awards now, outstripping champagnes.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
That's because the pH level in the soil is actually the same as the Champagne region, similar sort of climate.
And Sussex is now an official wine region.
Yeah. Yeah,
so that's how much we've... And it's the likes of Ridgeview that have actually sort of, you know, hauled the British wine industry by its bootstraps up to the world-class status that it is. Right, sorry, Ada, let's get back to Man City.
This is what happens when you lose 4-0, folks. It's terrible. Yeah.
Not a champagne moment.
I mean, this game wasn't even a close shave, was it?
But, not bad.
But yeah, Gillette was not the best. It was the best that Man City could get. Right. And
right, who's going to go first with this litany of behaviour? Should we start with the worst ones, or should we try and do it chronologically?
Well, the first goal was just us being rubbish.
No, before that. No, the first one. First one was the fact that in the first minute, Danny Werbeck got clattered with a high boot. Referee said play on. Right, now we can go on to the next one.
Yes, agreed. Yeah. We had a very good view of that. Clear foul. Didn't even give him a foul, did he?
Yeah.
It looked like a booking from where I was.
Right, well, there you go. I mean, it's all these things that are just going to get passed by when Sky and what have you. I mean, it's, and Jamie Redknapp, what are you on about? It would have been a soft penalty. Sorry. If you want to talk about... No, we're not going to talk about the goals because we're not going to talk about the goals. We're going to talk about Jared Gillett or Garrot or Guillotine or whatever his name should be.
He's a sleeveless jacket. That's what he is.
He is. Yeah.
I thought it was very generous of him to inject some passion into the crowd.
Yes. it was slightly library-like before that, but okay.
Let's talk about him falling for Foden's play acting and just general lack of gravity.
Was it play acting, or do you want to give him the benefit of the doubt and say he's a slip?
I wouldn't disagree that he slipped. It's the fact that he slipped and then threw his arms in the air, not only claiming a free kick but trying to imply it was in the box.
Yeah,
that's what I saw from him throwing his arms in the air. And I love Phil Foden. I mean, what a great footballer to watch, and he was brilliant. But that was just very, very frustrating, wasn't it? Poor from him.
And you just think there's no need to do it. You know, you're 1-0 up, you're cruising. Mm. Second goal is almost imminent.
Yeah.
It was what it was. And you know, and I've also got to look at Pascal Gross for this one, because the free kick came in and he turned his back a bit in order it deflected. You know, you think, aren't you supposed to stand up to these? You know, that I'm surprised it wasn't given as an own goal, because that free kick was going a long way wide.
Yeah. Still had it covered, didn't he? Without doubt.
He would have done if it would have gone the right way, but Pascal Gross just sort of stood. I mean, it's not to blame him. I mean, it's just one of those things that happens. But yeah, it's absolutely astonishing. And I think it's it's not. I mean, Foden falling over the way he did, I might say, benefit of the doubt, he slipped. He didn't really throw himself over. But once he was down on the ground, yeah, he did claim it. But how could there... Because the referee was standing right there. In fact, I remember it. And bearing in mind, I'm in the West Stand up here. I'm 70 yards from what's going on. And I thought, well, either our players got it, or he slipped, or he's trodden on the ball, or something like that. And Guillotine, he just sort of like looks down and, right, okay, what's going to happen here? And still gathers the ball. And then he gives a free kick. And it's like he couldn't wait to give the free kick. Now, the only thing I might say about it is that on his way into the area, he was very, very slightly clipped by Modda. But it didn't stop him, and I don't think it stopped him from his run. But if that was going to be the free kick, and let's face it, it would have been a pitifully tame free kick, then at least take it the 5 yards back that it was. But the slip over... and this is where... we don't want it taken over to the extent that it is. VAR, it's outside VAR's remit.
Yeah, I think a lot of people miss that.
Yeah. I mean, if it would have, the weird thing is, if it was in the area and the referee would have given the penalty, well, I was going to say VAR would have turned it over. Not in this universe. Not in this universe, maybe.
Yeah. Okay, so I mean, we know it wasn't a free kick. The referee fell for it, he gave it, and they scored from the resulting free kick. That's that. Next one. Which one of the penalties would you like to talk about first?
Should we do them in chronological order? I think that the first one is the shirt pull on Pascal Gross, isn't it?
There was the handball as well. Have you seen the handball?
Which one was first? That's all.
I think the handball was first.
Okay.
The Adingra cross.
Right.
No, I mean, I've not seen it in real time. I've only seen it in slow motion.
Yeah, they've not included it in the highlights.
I think it would be the most harsh of the three if it was given, right? I mean, right. His arm was... Have you seen it?
Yes, I have seen it, albeit sort of very briefly. For me, his arm was not in a particularly unnatural position. I've heard people say he moved his arm towards it, but even then, when you see it in slow motion, it doesn't tell the story because you've got to see it in real time. It does hit his hand, but it was only, what, 3-4 yards away?
I think that would have been extremely hard. But again... If the referee gives it, it doesn't get overturned, right?
Well, that's the whole thing that winds me up, really, because it's this whole notion of a modern penalty, it's just ridiculous. Where
it seems to be very subjective.
If the ref
it?
Gives it, it they've got a chance to overturn it. If he doesn't give it, it won't get overturned. It's just really bizarre.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I suppose there is the whole check badge thing.
Yeah,
And you can't help thinking the cynic within you, John, would have said, "Well, if it was at the other end, that would have been given, wouldn't it?"
Yep, I believe it would have been. Yeah.
Okay. What about the next one?
The Pascal Gross. Now, I just saw him being a little. I thought he was being a little bit weak. Gross.
Yeah. There's a possibility that was outside the area.
Well,
anyway,
no, it was, but it carried on into the area, and therefore that can be given as a penalty, even if it started outside the area, if it's something that carries on into it. At the time, I thought it was weak, and then you see the replay from that camera behind the goal. It's not as though he's got a sort of I'll say he hasn't got an entire shirt load. He's pulled it so that it looks now that Gross's shirt is two sizes too small for him. It's a shirt pull. A shirt pull is a foul. I mean, and yet here we are. You know, there was the Lewis Dunk one last year where the shirt pull didn't get given. I suppose there was the one this season where I think it was Welbeck got his shirt pulled. Now, it's not as dramatic as that, but it's still a shirt pull.
Yeah. Okay, and then the one, the most blatant one of the lot, which
I dare. We'll get the radio station closed down if I really said what I think.
Yeah. But the Pedro one, which was the most blatant one of the lot.
Who's going to go for this?
A clear push.
Clearly cut. I mean, Pedro did cut across him, didn't he? But then
which
he had every right
to do,
absolutely entitled to do. You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of, and you know, thinking Big Six and a comparison.
Cool.
It really reminded me of Milner and Mudrić in December,
right?
When there was that minimal touch from Milner on Mudrić, and they looked at it for. three or four minutes before finally being able to give Chelsea a penalty.
Yes. Yeah.
And very similar, right? Coming from behind, they realised they were finally able to give a tangle of legs when they saw finally an angle that proved it.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, you know, you could see from any angle he caught him.
You see, here's the thing. I mean, he's been injured for so long, I've forgotten that James Milner actually plays for us.
I did have to think what you meant there, but yeah, I mean, there's others that were saying, well, he went across, who was it, Guardiol or whatever his name
Guardiol,
was.
Guardiol, yeah.
Yeah. He went across him. Well, Pedro's got the ball. He can go where he wants.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, it's not as though he stuck his leg out to you know, he was expecting it to come to, you know, but he had his legs chopped away. John, I don't know if it was something you witnessed, but certainly from the West Stand upper, there's this thing that obviously clearly they're looking at it. The referee, you could see his body language. He had no intention of giving it. He really didn't want to. He wasn't going to. But then you could see the referee explain it to Lewis Dunk.
Yeah.
And Lewis Dunk looked as though he was going to knock Gillette into the middle of next week for that. It's so frustrating, knowing full well that we've got a referee who isn't actually interested in anything that we've got to do. The bar has got to be raised so high.
You just know when those sort of things happen, and you haven't given it straight away, that, and I mean, it's Manchester City, nothing's going to happen. Just know it, and it's so frustrating. And I mean, it's not just ourselves, and I mean, Forest, this seems to be happening to Forest every other game at the minute.
Yeah, and Wolves.
I mean, Forest, we had some rather unusual decisions in our favour when we were playing Forest as well.
Remind me.
I think there was two or three that I thought,
The Moda red card, wasn't it? Against Forest?
Oh, yeah, that was definitely...
That was Forest, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's... and you saw the referee looking straight at it. Now, he might have had a few legs in the way to... I mean, we're talking about the Pedro trip here. You know, fine, fair enough. The linesman had a clearer view. But then VAR... Is VAR there to, I mean, he's an assistant. I do appreciate it's not a video additional referee. But if he's there to clarify something that the referee clearly didn't see, what was John Brooks thinking about not saying, no, this is not a penalty? Under what circumstances, anyone in this room, please, without swearing, under what circumstances is that not a penalty?
He should at least...
Can anyone think of anything that actually mitigates it?
I mean, with that one, he should at least been told to go look at the screen.
But I was thinking, is it even worth sending him to the screen? I mean, it's so blatant, you don't even need to go to the screen,
well, you
right?
have to,
I mean,
because the referee is the only one.
Is that what you have to do to overturn it? I mean,
for a penalty,
For a foul, is that right? Is that the rule?
For offside, VAR decides, but for a penalty... Because they're subjective.
Ditto.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, let's face it, Charles. It was a frustrating evening. I mean, we were, we didn't really lay a glove on them, but it was.
We have other things to discuss with this. The offsides. Now, when we were given offsides, the flag went up like a toaster every single time, ping straight up. The one that really thingied my watsits. Was it was
buttered your muffins?
Ground my gears.
Ground your beans.
It was right at the end of the first half. I couldn't tell you who went through, but it was clear they were offside by a couple of yards. And they were offside probably about 10 yards inside our half, less than that. linesman sort of like, you know, okay, let it play on, let it play out, fine. That's what the rule is, what's the law is, fine. Eventually, by the time the ball gets into the area, it's flagged for offside. Okay, fine, fair enough. Referee insists we take the free kick inside our penalty area instead of where the offside originally was, back near the halfway line. And he's screaming at Lewis Dunk to take it back. He's trying to tell him, no, it's over there. And you know, I'm thinking, this is not how you should referee a game, by arbitrarily inventing your own rules. And yet when we had very sort of iffy offside, up in the flag, no chance of play on.
So this is a rarity here. It's usually me being incandescent about refs and Al telling me to be quiet. It's quite good. It's like
I told you to be quiet.
Are you feel better? I mean, do you need to lie down?
No. I'm going to keep going.
Okay,
I'm going to say this all in French next.
Okay, well, you know what I'm going
to... Yes, John.
We're going to have these electronic offsides from next season. It's going to be very interesting to see how that works.
That is a better system.
Is it? Does anyone? Can anyone sort of give us a heads up as to how it does?
It's the automated one which they used in the World Cup.
It was the World World Cup, wasn't it? Yeah. And does it work in France, don't they, as well?
There's talk about how the VAR in Europe works better, and it's that system which they're using in Europe as well. Mm. So it should have come in here earlier, but for some reason they didn't want it.
Did you hear what happened to Sweden?
They never had VAR anyway, and they've decided not to bring it in.
Yeah,
anyway.
They've actually rejected VAR.
Yeah,
good on them.
Yeah. But yeah. And actually, as much as you say it works in Europe, I'll see that Rome third goal and raise it. You know,
Well, we're going to get onto that very very shortly. But first, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. This is the Reverbathon. You can donate. You can help keep this brilliant radio station going. Go to www.radioreverb.com, hit that donate button, and we've got various sponsors today.
Yes, we have three wonderful co-sponsors. We've got to say a big shout out to Dave Costa of Flowers Unlimited, Albion's official florist. I know this because I saw all the advertisements on the. I mean, of all things that you're going to have, I mean, there's tyres and there's financial services and what have you. In our case, it's flowers. Albion's official florist, and he's also the florist of our wedding as well. For all things floral, visit the shop at 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. Website at flowersunlimitedbrighton.co.uk, or call 01273 796 000. I could talk about their products, but I have no idea about flowers at all. So
they're fragrant.
They're fragrant,
beautifully fragrant.
Yes, they rose to the occasion. They rose. Yeah. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Flowers Unlimited, for your support in the Reverbathon.
And of course, this show is brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com, the official sponsor of the Albion Roar.
It is.
It is. And Phil has given us a shirt of the week. I have just sent it to you guys. If you've got it on your can have a quick look at your phones.
Yeah, thanks, because I've got it now. Right. Okay, talk amongst yourselves while we talk about this. Yes, just to reiterate, please do head to radioreverb.com, hit the big donate button, and if you're going to hit it in a big way, then please donate in a big way as well. So, Adi, have you sent us this?
I have.
Okay, we're not panicking at the moment, but I'm just going to tell you that this is a yellow shirt. It looks almost like a goalkeeper shirt. It's got black piping down the sleeves. It's unusually sponsored by Aftercare Northwest Limited. I couldn't tell... Sorry about that. And I couldn't tell you the badge, so I'm not going to guess. So I'm going to leave that to our good friends John and Steve, who are going to tell us who this shirt is.
I'm going to jump in with Southport.
You'd be jumped in and be correct.
Wow. How did that happen? Go on, John, how do you know?
Well, he said northwest, and I'm looking at the picture there. So there's got it's a seaside northwest town. It looks a little bit non-league. The yellow there is quite a statement.
Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. Well. So do you want to have a go at the year as well, John? Seeing as you're on fire.
No.
I'll go 97.
No, it's not 97. It's a bit later than that.
Okay. Go on. Who is it? Well, tell us about it.
Well, I'll tell you exactly.
I'm just my ghast is flabbered, really.
Would you like to hear about this jersey?
No.
Okay. Here is your shirt of the week, and it is a 2005 to 2006 home shirt of National League Northside Southport FC. The side was formed in 1888, and they go by the nickname the Sand Grounders. Home since 1905 is the 6008 capacity Hague Avenue Stadium, which is also used by the under 23 Everton team. In 1921, Southport joined the Football League as a founder member of Division 3 North, and they remained a Football League side until 1978, when they became the very last side to be de-elected from the league after three consecutive seasons, when they finished 23rd out of 24. Automatic relegation from the Football League was introduced in what year, everyone there?
About 92?
No, it was earlier than that. It was actually 86-87 season.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Some notable former Southport players include Peter With. He began his career with Southport in 1970, and he went on to play for a number of Division 1 teams and even won the European Cup. Luther Blissett made half a dozen appearances for the side in 1994. And a little more up to date, Brentford goalie David Raya began his senior career there in 2014, playing 16 times for Southport whilst on loan from Blackburn. And John Bishop, the comedian, made 35 appearances for Southport in 1990-91 season. And there are, of course, some links to the Albion. There's a couple he's picked out. Jimmy Melia never played for either Brighton or Southport, but he did manage both sides. Outside left, Ernie Ison was with us in 1924. Was he now? He moved on.
That is some barrel scraping.
he moved to, from Southport. And a little bit more up to date, Craig Noon. Apparently, did you know, he once did Stephen Gerrard's roof.
No, I really wish he told us that.
He had a brief stint at Southport in 2008 before being spotted by it and signed by Plymouth for his first professional contract. So thank you for that, Phil. You, of course, you can see that and over 130,000 other shirts over at oldfootballshirts.com. Yes, John?
So I'm going to jump in as the groundhopper there. The original Hague Avenue is still there, and I would like to say thriving, but the original ground is still there. It makes a wonderful, wonderful place to visit.
Yeah.
Apparently there's a very nice beach in Southport.
Well, the thing is, when I think Southport and that beach in question, I just think Red Rum. It used to gallop up and down the famously really? Up and down the beach at Southport.
Wasn't Chariots of Fire filmed there as well?
No, I think it was probably a bit further up the coast. And a quiz question for you. Can you remember, you said Southport lost their league status in 1978. Can you remember who took their place?
Cambridge?
No, I can tell you it was Wigan Athletic.
Wow. Oh, there we go. Yeah. There we go. Okay, well, this is the Reverbathon here on Radio Reverb, and you can go to RadioReverb.com and hit that donate button. Many of you already have, but keep those donations coming. It's so important to keep this brilliant radio station going. Now, talking about going places. Now, John, now you're well known for your travels around the world with various salubrious tales, which would definitely get us to get really put off there.
And arrested, probably.
For the first time in our history, we had a European tour.
We did.
Now, you put together this wonderful WhatsApp group, and you were just filling everyone with all sorts of useless information. Although you
and
did
useful.
Well, you know what? Actually, I mean, he did send me. John sent me this message whilst we were in Rome.
Go on. Oh,
he wanted me to go to a flipping jazz. I hate jazz.
I would have gone.
But talk to me about your European tour, John.
I think top of the list is Marseille. I think, you know, we were expecting to get into an awful lot of trouble. So, God bless him, Attila, the stockbroker, calls me the night before the game and says, I've got this brilliant idea, which normally freezes you with terror. And he comes up with, I've lined up a gig with the local ultras. And I'm like, John, what part of keep a low profile So we rock along to this gig, and it's about two-thirds Brighton, one-third Marseille, and it's a top night, an absolutely top night. And I know everybody had individual experiences out there. Some weren't quite as friendly. I found a nice part of town, and I was welcomed with open arms wherever I went. One occasion, I had my little handbook out. I'm trying to speak to the guy in French. He reaches over gently to my shoulder and says, this is Marseille, not Paris. You can speak English.
I've come a cropper in Paris, having a go at their French. And that's the thing I find about Paris or Parisians, is if you have a go at French, they'll take the mick out of you for it.
Well, you know what? I was in Paris a few years ago, and I found this bar, right? And I'm there.
Of course you did.
And I go out to the bar, and Al knows just how brilliant my French is. I go, je veux du bière, s'il vous plaît. And he said, oh, you want 2 pints, mate? And he's really from London.
To be fair, I mean, yes. Yeah. What did you say? But so you wanted a beer?
I want a beer. I want two beers.
How did it come out from your French?
Oh, I can't remember. One of those. Anyway.
Okay.
So anyways,
you gigged with the ultras. What about Amsterdam? Rome and Athens, obviously not in that order.
Next one up in order of credit is Athens. Beautiful city. I didn't realise the city centre and all the old artefacts, etc. The beautiful areas of history were so compact around the city centre. And again, we had lovely weather out there, great food, beautiful place to visit, and again, made welcome everywhere I went. This time, I found a death metal rock bar.
See, why didn't you do that in Blimey Rome?
Yeah, well,
I put it on. I put it on my very poorly used WhatsApp group to come along. Yeah. I got one person along. So,
yeah, well, I wasn't actually in Athens.
We did party into the night down there. Although Satan may have been worshipped on several occasions.
Was Athens when Fatboy Slim gigged there as well?
Yes, he did. Yeah. But, I mean, everybody was in the mood for parties, weren't they?
So, well, absolutely. Right. I mean, it's. I think that probably, because sadly I never got to go to any of these, the away games, but I did actually find, for the home game, the Athens fans the most approachable, the most friendly.
Yeah.
I mean, it helped, I suppose, on a certain level. We had, Attila's kitchen fitter, yes. who's also an AEK fan, and was absolutely tickled pink when he saw the draw come out, you know. AEK would be playing Brighton, and I think he just jumped out of his curly hair. It was brilliant. and he was on the Raw with us in the day. Yeah, so, but I found them utterly brilliant. What about the sort of like the fans both home and away that you came across? Did it sort of meet your worst fears, or did you think that actually it wasn't as bad as I feared?
Well, I mean, working on the advice, I attempted to steer away from the major fan areas and just treated it like you would being a regular tourist. I didn't have colours on, although I sort of like things that pertain to the fact that I was from Brighton, like a T-shirt which shows the West Pier, which is burnt out underneath it, or a Harvey's T-shirt.
Or walking around with a seagull on your shoulder.
Wanted to make a connection there. But no, I mean, I basically stayed away from the major football zones, didn't have the colours, and
So Steve, I mean, you had a European tour as well. You went to most of the games, didn't you?
I went to two, so I did Marseille and Rome. But in terms of fans, Marseille, the noise, John.
Oh,
it was incredible.
It was. They're fabulous.
I just thought, and also the warm welcome on the buses. Did you do the buses on the way in?
Yes.
And we had to, all the cars, they took us through the motorways, and all the cars had to move to one side. It was the bypass, wasn't it? I think the Marseille bypass. All the cars moved to one side, and it was so pleasant to see all the nice waving from all the fans and all the cars. All the lovely hand gestures welcoming us.
Oh, that kind of way.
Yeah, it was literally every other car was giving us a hand signal.
The guy racing us on his bike, you know, with his finger in the air. But don't know how he was controlling his bike. Probably very badly. And we were just waiting for the smash, you know. We had the cameras out waiting, you know, for the inquest.
Yes. But I think the one thing for me, after the game, when we finally got... We got out of the ground in the... We were in the early batch. Yes, we were in the first bus out. We managed to get back to the hostel for a pint afterwards. Actually walked past an Ultras bar, and one of us had a Brighton shirt that was showing, and that was the only dodgy moment we had.
Yes. So
we
was got this Marseille or Rome, you're saying?
This was Marseille.
Okay.
Got into the bar, and when I sat down and with a pint, I realised my ears were ringing from the noise in the grounds.
Oh, really?
Like, an hour and a half later. It was just unbelievable. And I'll always associate that trip with the Joel Veltman song, because it was just sung endlessly the whole time we were there.
Are you allowed to do it now? Because I'm not 100% sure about it. Does it contain a rude word?
It doesn't, but I've actually got laryngitis, so if I sing, it could be a problem.
Okay.
But it's that one. That was absolutely incredible.
No brooms are required.
That was the trip.
Okay, we're going to get back to Steve and John's European adventures in just a moment, but you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. It's the Reverbathon weekend, whereby this is a radio station, because it's a community asset that receives funding through donations, sponsorships and grants. And we're looking for the big D from you guys out in Radio Land, donations. So if you want to go head to radioreverb.com, hit the donate button, which is halfway down the page. If you want to do it several times, knock yourself out. But by the same token, we also have sponsors. And we have a third co-sponsor. Thank you very much indeed to Ensure, who say Ensure Financial Services provides financial advice to families and businesses across Sussex. As chartered financial planners, we are dedicated to protecting the assets and wealth of our customers. We work with our clients to ensure that they have the best investment decisions made for them for their circumstances, and keep more of their money in order to fulfil their goals, aspirations and dreams. Ensure, thank you very much indeed for sponsor for co-sponsoring the Reverbathon and the Albion Raw show alongside Flowers Unlimited and Ridgeview Wine Estate. And like I say, if you want to join them, please go to RadioReverb.com and hit the donate button. So
yeah, and don't forget, if you're listening to the podcast, it's not too late. Not you still can donate. Just please go to RadioReverb.com and hit that button.
Okay, so we've had Marseille and the friendly sort of gestures and welcomes. Was Amsterdam any more mellow?
Amsterdam was cold and very wet.
It was very wet.
Yeah, I literally, after the game, I went to a beer bar, which was quite crowded, and it didn't. I think, well, you know, we've just won in Amsterdam, for goodness sake. So go back in and join the atmosphere. Go and join the party.
Yeah.
So I walked into this bar, and obviously the guys there hadn't had tickets. They'd been drinking there all day, and it was like Dante's vision of hell.
It's the second time we mentioned Dante today, isn't it?
I think I'm going to go back to the hotel, because right, there's a nice little bar there, so I trotted all the way back to the hotel, and the bar was shut. The unimaginative end of that evening.
Whereas you actually put on a comedy show, didn't you, Ali?
I did. I was live from the Amsterdam Comedy Cafe. We did a show there with Steve Grant and with the guys from Under the Lights. They want us to do another one. There will be another one at some point, hopefully somewhere in Europe. But yeah, no, it was a sold-out show. We had... I was on stage with Steve Grant and Brian Owen doing a live Raw over there, which was absolutely hilarious. Brian said to me, I don't have to be funny, do I? And it was, but you know, Brian was absolutely brilliant, as he always is. And
absolutely, yeah, can't wait to have him back in here. It's up to you, mate. So Rome, notwithstanding the stuff on the pitch, it's a beautiful city. It's the eternal city. It's one of the most stunning cities in the world ever. And yet the Albion fans' experience as a collective, probably not as positive as it could have been, especially given what happened to two of our own. But did that... I was about to say, I'm trying not to be flippant and say, did it spoil it for you? But at the back of your minds, you just think, wow, there but for the grace of God.
Well, hence my my tactics of hiding in a jazz bar.
Yeah, nobody's going there.
The safest place. Were you on your own in there, by the way?
I was on my own in there, but I'd learned this tactic before many, many years ago. A friend of mine came up with an idea, which you might describe as a suicide mission. He decided that let's get tickets. We were staying in Prague.
Right.
And he decided, let's get tickets for the European Cup game in Dresden. Oh, great. Yeah, who are they playing? Red Star.
Not a good idea.
Not a good idea. We managed to get 66 minutes of football. But basically, the Dresden fans had decided that they were going to have a go at the Red Star fans. The Red Star fans was Aachen's boys from the war,
yep,
on holiday. It was unbelievable scenes. So all hell was breaking out around us. And so we ducked it by hiding in a cellar wine bar.
Of course.
So this is a tactic that might work in the future. So.
This is probably what happens when you come from Brighton, is that you don't worry about any concept of effeminacy. You just hide in, you know, you could be, like I say, sort of hiding from Serbian fans in a wine bar is probably a stroke of genius, actually.
Well, yeah, that's what we thought, because they actually you could see it going on. You could see it going on above us, because there was sort of like little lights and.
Yeah, not that I'd leg it as far as Ridgeview to
yeah. Okay, but I mean the European tour, it was absolutely wonderful. What an amazing experience for us to have it, and we're all hungry for more now. Obviously, the injuries have done for our season pretty much. We're still not out of it. We can still do it. And with the games that we've got left, Steve's shaking his head violently. Look, the glass is always half full, Steve.
I would take 3 points right now, I think.
What are they?
Three more juicy points.
It's been a while.
We're going to struggle to get many.
I just have a feeling about five, I think.
Has your perspective on where the Albion are at in terms of being a top 10... you know, one of the bigger 10 clubs, because top 10 is not out of our reach as well. Has your perspective changed on the back of actually us getting to sixth and into Europe?
Yes.
Into what?
I think I'm a little more ambitious. I would like to see more positivity in the transfer market. We went after a number of targets this year and failed on them. And maybe we're setting our sights a little too highly. We should be looking maybe at the promising players coming up through the championship, and you know, as in the way that Palace have done, and as in the way that several other clubs have done, West Ham, and brought in quality players that have settled into the squad and not been quite so itchy to move on to the next stage.
So you're basically saying you want box fresh ready, players that are ready to go, not going to take time to bed in.
I would like a mixture. Yeah, I would certainly like more.
I don't think we have any choice. I mean, if you look at the squad at the moment, I mean, there's no guarantee Gross is going to stay unless you guys know something different.
Can't say one way or the other. Go on.
It feels like centre-halves, we've probably got two that are good enough at the moment. And then
I think we've only got two that are fit.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, we need probably a left-back and a right-back, like a proper left-back and a right-back. We need at least one central midfielder, maybe two. Yeah. We probably need more goals. I mean, we've got about eight players that can play on the left wing, but when you bring in Osman and, you know, Barco and all of these players. Mm. But I think the next window... I was thinking about this earlier. I think the next window is arguably our most important window since Potter's first window.
In what way?
Absolutely.
Where if you look at the points we've gained since Man United, we've gained 29 points in 27 games. And if we don't build from there, I think we could be around the bottom six next season.
Yep.
I really think we are in danger of being really a bottom half side rather than even a mid-table side next season.
I mean, obviously, the other side of this as well, when you look at the sides that are going to be coming up from the championship this year,
it's
as opposed
strong,
to the ones that...
Quality,
when you've got... You're going to have... Well, obviously, like Leicester are already back up, and they're going to be...
Ipswich haven't been up for a bit. I think they could actually sort of flounder a little bit. They could end up being a little bit of a yo-yo club.
A bit Burnley.
Yeah, but my point would be is that, and this is, it's not as though we were falsely high, but when you lose, and I've said this many times on the Raw, when you lose the likes of McAllister, Bissouma and Caicedo in the space of 12 months, that is a difficult...
And leaving.
Yeah. And that is a difficult midfield to replace. We were blessed with players who, let's face it, they came as rough diamonds and were polished into something pretty sexy, and we've ended up getting £200 million north of those players. Now, that's not necessarily the way we can either get £200 million or we can actually, you know, start climbing the table. And that, as you say... players who want to stick around and enjoy the fruits of De Zerbi's labours, or clear off to Liverpool, Chelsea and cash in on the dollar. To replace those three means that we've now sort of gone back two years probably, and are waiting for the next set of central midfielders to come through. Baliba is the next big hope that was supposed to be following in after Caicedo. He hasn't made the leaps and bounds, but you also have to remember Caicedo took a long time to settle in.
As did McAllister.
I remember Caicedo playing quite a few times for the under 23s. Don't get me wrong, he shone for them. But he took his while to get there because he had to unseat Bissouma first. These things do take time, and I take your point. Do we have it where we have what we have and we have a decent pre-season, these players improve? Or, as you say, box fresh ready players ready to go for the championship.
Yeah, but I mean, Steve, don't forget, we did sign a player last summer who's gone out on loan with Mo Dahoud. You know, that he would have been playing now. I mean, could he have to? I mean, he might have actually shown what De Zerbi thought was there in the first place.
It's a strange one, wasn't it, for De Zerbi to fall out with his own signing, the one that he clearly wanted.
Yeah.
But he's got a bit, you know, there's been a few now, hasn't there, that he's fallen out with. But I think the attempt to sign Dewsbury Hall seemed to me to be an indication that we are trying to go for that box-ready player. Was it 40 million bid, was it?
But again, we didn't get it over the line, and we've now got no chance of doing it in the summer. We were a team in Europe. Dewsbury Hall was a possibility of moving on, and we've missed it.
Yeah, it was. You know what? There's going to be a buyer's market, though. I mean, there's so many clubs that are going to be in crisis this summer. Mm. I mean, Leicester, even though they've been promoted, they're still going to have to sell.
But are they? I mean, they're starting to fiddle about with the rules again because the top six don't like it.
And also, there's rumours that bigger clubs than us are in for him, right? So yes, we're going to miss out on that
Tottenham,
one.
I think, has been mentioned.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? And it's really not easy with the wage constraints that we have to get those players. It's going to be a tough one. And I think we've also got a fair amount of players that are getting older.
Yeah,
you know,
it
felt like Lallana's testimonial the other night, didn't it? Give him a go up front.
Well, Lallana's, I mean, he reckons he's still got another season left in him. You've got Milner possibly got another season as well. So, I mean, you know, there will be other players. It's just, you know, these are players like I said to you earlier, I've completely forgotten that James Milner existed because, and you know, we were talking about the game in Rome earlier and the fact that, you know, you go into that game, if you've got the experience of Milner, I think Lallana should have probably started in that game as well because you needed the experience. But if you go into that, you know, there was no Matoma, there's no Pedro either, there was no Solly March, there was... You know, there's no Jack. Even Jack Hinterwood is a massive miss because he became so vitally important.
We did need the experience of Jack Hinterwood. Yeah, It did become. It's been a challenging season all round, hasn't it? With the injuries, it has. I mean, when we played Man United, that period of form that I was talking about. I think the Man United game was about the last time we seemed to have a relatively full squad. I think Nciso was out for that one, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And then by the time we played Villa, which was the next league match, Hinchinwood was starting in central midfield, so we had injuries and issues.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, it's a story. We can still talk about this if we're blue in the face. But
that's why we do it every week, mate.
I know, it is strange, but we are running out of time. Don't forget, this is the Reverbathon here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM. Please go to radioreverb.com and hit that donate button. Help us as much as you possibly can. The cost of a pint, the cost of a croissant, the cost of a coffee, anything you can
give. The cost of a round at the Grand Hotel, how's that?
Well, that would be absolutely fabulous. But like the Albion, we're hoping that the season's not going to just peter out, and let's just hope that we're not yet on the beach. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast with John Palfrey, with Steve Agass, with Alan Wears. I've been AD Packham. We'll see you again next week. Thanks for listening. Bye.